Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 105 of Season 3 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today to finish off this week, week 21, is Patty Flint of the upcoming FFPS podcast. Welcome back to the show, Patty.
How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing great. But what are we going to do now?
Well, we're about to see what our ill-gotten gains are, I think, aren't we?
Apparently.
The end of the treasure hunt.
Yes. Very true. So, minute 105 begins with Theo beginning to open up some metal trays and ends with Big Johnson is talking into the radio. So, yesterday we ended things. They finally opened the vault. We had our Merry Christmas, you know, and wait, what does Tiny Tim say? And to all of into all good night? No. What does he say? God blesses everyone. That's what
God blesses everyone.
There you go. God blesses everyone. So so we had all the Ode to Joy and the klaxons blaring and all that stuff. And then, you know, Leo, Christoph, and Hans go into...
Hair draft. You forgot the hair draft.
The hair draft. Hair draft. That's true. And then they go into the vault itself. And, you know, we got cut off yesterday as Theo, you know, very giddily runs into the vault. And today we continue with that. And, you know, he really does look like a little kid who's just, woken up Christmas morning and, you know, sees all the presents in front of him.
Yeah, you know, very much so.
Yeah, he just does a great job of that. And he runs over and starts opening up all these metal boxes, which, you know, contain all these different papers in them. Now, we know what they are. These are the bearer bonds that this whole movie has been, you know, dealing with. You know, I mean, they don't really mean much, but they're there. And, you know, he's opening up all these different cases of bearer bonds. Now, it makes me wonder, you know, if they're trying to save space, they could have just, like, stacked them one on the other. But, you know, they want it to be a little more flexible for us so that we can see how many there are.
Yeah, dramatic effect, I guess.
Yes, definitely. There's a lot of dramatic effect there. And,
but then I guess maybe they would have them all, if they wanted to do it, they would maybe just have them all stacked up as paper without the metal containers.
Yeah.
You know, let's make them work for their money here rather than just giving them a handy box to carry them out.
No, but the people in Nakatomi also need to be able to have them, you know, easily movable if they need to.
Yeah. If they need to fritter them away to some other, you know, non-tax country or...
When we discussed about bearer bonds months ago, so the whole idea of bearer bonds is that, you know, you can go and cash them in anywhere. It's not a problem.
Oh, yeah, of course. And they don't make them anymore, do they?
No, they stopped doing them because of the problematic aspects of them.
Because of the Nakatomi situation.
Apparently. That's right. That's definitely true. And... You know, he's just opening up all the various things. And then we, you know, the shot changes and we see Christoph show up. And Christoph looks at all these different, you know, Japanese ornaments. You know, we see what looks like a samurai armor. And, I mean, these must be just priceless artifacts.
You know? Yes. And then he pings the left breast of Buddha.
Yes.
Now, that... That, you know, I'm not sure how that fits in. I don't know whether it's a kind of, you know, what a lovely present. But, you know, it doesn't seem very right, you know.
Yeah.
It's a very, very bizarre one.
Yeah, it's definitely bizarre. There's no question about that. You know, and just if you look at the way, you know, and he, you know, like he, first of all, we hear the ping as he does it.
Yeah. And then he looks very smug. He was just like a kid who just got away with something. You know, I've just pinged the left breast of Buddha.
Yes.
You know, it just looks really bizarre.
Yeah. And then he like walks by a painting, which the camera actually takes the time to zoom in on this painting and turn the camera in order for us to try to see what this painting is. Are you familiar with this painting? Have you ever seen it before?
I am.
You are.
I've actually done some work. See, so some friends of mine were big fans of Impressionist art. I was more of a Monet fan, you know, but I did a bit of research on this.
You did research, or you just asked them to tell you what it is?
No, I did some research on my own. But it was an Edgar Degas, 1873, I believe, of the dance class. I couldn't find a value of it, but it's surely more valuable than leaning up against the corner or against the wall of a vault. You know, you would have it like somewhere safe, as they do with every other painting on the planet. You wouldn't just lean it up like the ladder in the bathroom. You know?
Yeah.
I still can't get over that at all, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, and I couldn't find also the how much this painting is worth. You know, I found that it is located in the National Gallery of Art. You know, that's where you can find it. Not in the Nakatomi Building.
No.
You know, it's for anyone who's looking for it. It's in the West Building on the main floor, Gallery 83.
There you go.
Yeah, and it was, you know, as you said, it was painted around 1873. No one knows exactly, you know, when. But I also couldn't find the actual price. My assumption is this is probably priceless.
Yes, I would say so. Certainly to be, it deserves to be in a better place than resting up against a wall in a vault.
Yeah. It's probably not worth more than $600 million, but still, you know.
Something could happen to your $600 million, you know. Someone could steal it. And then, you know, I mean, God forbid someone stole $600 million from the guy who stole $600 million.
Right.
And then he could have that as a backup.
That's true. He actually has numerous, Degas actually has numerous paintings of the dance class. This isn't the only one that he has, which is very, very interesting. So, I mean, he has a number of different paintings dealing with the dance class. But,
yes.
You know, they basically say that the prices range from, range up to $37 million, basically, depending on which, you know, which form, which of them they actually are. So, yeah, I can't tell you which one, how much this one actually is worth. But I don't think it makes a difference because, you know, it's just sitting in a vault, you know, collecting all that air that's going to go out onto Hans's, you know, hair.
Well, maybe they created a vacuum in there or some sort of airlock to stop any stop it from getting damaged.
Could be. Yeah. Who knows? And then, you know, they go back to Theo, and Theo once again is continue to open up all of the various containers with the money, and he's really happy. He's looking. He's moving them up very quickly, and the music starts playing again. We get this fast version of the theme music from the from the movie, you know, and we see that we see the bearer bonds on the inside, and then the shot changes and we see a shot of the news truck, you know, speeding down the road, and what's really interesting is we could see that Nakatomi is really, really far in the distance. They made sure that we could see, you know, how far away they are, that they're, you know, that they don't really care. They're on a bigger scoop right now than a terrorist attack in the center of LA. You know, what could be more important than that?
Well, it's all about the angle, isn't it? They've found another angle where they could get the exclusive. So, yeah.
No, but it's you know, it's Thornburg. It's not them.
Yeah. And we know how much of a pain he is throughout the movies themselves. Yes.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. And, you know, we see then the shot changes again, and we see Al back at the command center. You know, and then the music dies down. And Al has a great line. Here he goes. Well, what are we going to do now? Arrest them for not paying their electric bill?
Yeah, but you switched it off. You know, I mean, they had every chance to pay it. You just switched off.
That's right.
You know, you didn't even give them any warning.
Right. So, I mean, I actually looked up if someone can actually go to jail for not paying their electric or gas bill or something like that, right? So the answer actually is, in the U.S., you can't go to jail for those things if you don't pay your electric bill or your gas or water bill. So you'll get a lot of warnings, and eventually they will just turn off your, whatever it is that you're not paying, whether it's electricity, gas, or water, right? If you don't pay your mortgage or your rent, you also won't go to jail. You'll just be evicted from your house, and they'll change the locks and stuff like that, right? The only way that you can actually go to jail for not paying a debt in the U.S. is if you don't pay taxes, right? Sometimes people who don't pay child support, they'll have a little bit of jail time, but it's more common that what they're going to do is just garnish wages, okay? And then the third way is if you if you have some sort of obligation to pay that was done in a fraudulent way, okay, the failure to pay isn't the reason for jail time. The fraud is, okay? So if the payments were made, the fraud would likely go undetected. Not paying it, you know, not paying is the indirect cause of jail time. So if you don't pay it, they're going to catch you, and they're going to realize that you did something fraudulent, and therefore you're going to go to jail.
Makes sense.
It's interesting that's what it is. And then, you know, we get the Johnsons responding to Al. So first Little Johnson says, you know, we shut him down, we'll let him sweat for a while, and then we give him helicopters. And then Big Johnson goes, right up the ass.
Again, it's something about asses. It's been prevalent throughout American culture and movies.
And I mean, Little Johnson, when he responds, he answers in a very calm way, you know, and he like even sticks some gum into his mouth as he's saying it. You know, he's chilling. You know, the way that he does it.
I got sort of memories of Kojak with the lollipop. Okay.
That makes sense.
You know, so I got that sort of deep in thought or answering a question, and then in goes the gum or whatever it was. Was it gum? It looked like a crisp.
No, I think it's like a piece of juicy fruit or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I think. So, and he mentions now helicopters. Yeah. Okay, now you having been in the Royal Air Force. Okay, what do you know about helicopters? Mm-hmm. What do you know about the history of helicopters? Anything?
I
know you dealt with dogs, so that's fine. You know, you have a way out.
Yeah, helicopters were pretty much really expensive umbrellas for us, same as aircraft. We used to hide under them because it was kept you dry. But apart from that, very little. Sikorsky, I think, must have been one of the original helicopters, maybe, but I believe there were. I think Leonardo da Vinci had plans for a flying machine that looked like a helicopter. Oh wow!
You see, you do know a lot more than you're apparently letting on that you know. So yes, you're right. The Sikorsky was the first helicopter to reach full scale production. Okay, a helicopter is a type of rotorcraft in which lift and thrust are supplied by horizontally spinning rotors. This allows the helicopter to take off and land vertically, or to hover, or to fly forward, backwards, and laterally. These attributes allow helicopters to be used in congested or isolated areas where fixed-wing aircraft and many forms of short takeoff and landing or short takeoff and vertical landing aircraft cannot perform without a runway. Okay, so Leonardo da Vinci was, in some of his designs, they had it. But the earliest known ideas for a helicopter was in 1907 in France. Okay. The word helicopter actually comes from the French word that is known as hélicoptère. I don't know. I don't know French that well. It, you know, you say the English word with an accent, you know, which was coined by Gustave Pantone in 1861. And which comes from a Greek word of helix. Okay, which means wing. No, sorry. No, sorry. Okay. Helix means spiral, and pteron means wing. Okay. And
makes sense.
A lot of people think that it comes from, heli and copter. So therefore they add, helipad and quadcopter and, things like that, even though it's incorrect. And other terms for a helicopter are chopper, copter, heli, whirlybird. And in the U.S., the most common slang is a helo. So, yeah, I mean, there's a really long history. We're not going to go into the whole thing about everything about helicopters because there are tons of them. I got like 5 pages of stuff on helicopters, and we're just not going to go into that. Yeah, okay. I don't think it's worth it. But what it basically comes down to is that helicopters, in most respects, have replaced airplanes in many situations where you need to be able to, land and take off quickly without the need of
absolutely
a runway and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So then we get the best gag of the entire movie. They show us Big Johnson. He's holding a radio, and he starts talking to the radio and goes, "This is Agent Johnson." And then he pauses for 1 second, and then he says, "No, the other one."
Yeah. I mean, I sat there for a while going, I mean, you would never have been able, would you have been able to get away with that line in modern movies?
No, I don't
now?
Think so. I don't think you'd be able to get away with it. And I don't think, and Robert Davi is not the actor that you would normally think would be given this type of gag. And that's why it worked so well.
No. Yeah, I think so. And you sit there going, now, what they're inferring about that question, Is it this guy, but it could have been anything, tall one, short one, but we know that the color of skin is inferred in the first, instance, but it could have been the big one or the little one.
Or just the other one. That's it. And he goes, I want that air support ready to lift off in 5 minutes. Damn right. Fully armed. We're on the way.
Oh yes. And then the look from Al.
It's like, oh, geez, again, this is what they're doing. Another.
Yeah.
he's like a little in shock that this is what they're actually doing.
Yeah. That sort of the cop face of great. Now I've seen everything, this could only go wrong.
Right.
Or even why did I have to still be on duty when this whole thing happened?
No, he could have left.
Yeah, I should have been at home with my pregnant wife and my Twinkies, and everything would have been great. But no, I'm stuck in the middle of this.
Correct. He's stuck here, but that's what he's got to deal with.
And I think every movie needs this kind of character where you've got all these take charge kind of guys turn up, and then you've just got your seasoned kind of guy sitting in the background just going, when they shoot out the lights, they're going for the lights. he knows exactly what's going on. He's a streetwise guy. And then you've got all these people coming up with big ideas around him. He's just going, well, that's stupid. A proper sergeant, that's the kind of guy you need.
Yeah, that's true. And then the shot changes and we see Theo flipping through a list of all the, a whole package of these bearer bonds. We see that they're all listed as $100,000 on them. And so it got me a little curious. First of all, it looks to me that it's George Washington that's on there. So my first question was, okay, is that real? Is that what, is that who's listed on the real bearer bond? Okay. But then I was also thinking about, can I actually find how much it would cost to buy one of these. So you can go onto eBay and for $5,000, they're selling the movie prop.
Yes. Really?
$5,000 on eBay. It's just unbelievable.
For a fake $100,000 bearer bond from Die Hard. Okay.
It's unbelievable.
So you can make money from nothing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the whole movie prop thing, but you know, $5,000 for a piece of paper that says $100,000.
And they let you pay it in installments. You can pay it in 24 installments of $216 each.
Yeah. That would that be like Christmas when that turned up? Oh, I've got my movie prop.
Exactly.
You put it up on a wall or something? I don't know. What would you do with that? I can't even think of
it. Seriously. And what's great is if you look at this Barabond that they have here on the site, the prop, right? So it says that it expires or it matures in February 1989. Okay. So, you know, again, it goes back to the whole question as to what year this movie is taking place. It doesn't matter. But the bottom line is that the odds are that it has not matured yet. It might mature in 2 months. But, it's assuming that it's not 1989. But it could be. You never know.
But,
we're not going to go into that debate again.
Okay.
I've debated that too many times. And there's no real answer to that one. You know. And then the shot changes again. You know, first of all, we hear how happy and we see how happy Theo is with this whole thing. He looks at Hans smiles, then walks out of the vault, and then he picks up his radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, he goes, "I wish to talk to the FBI." You know, and he's at this point moving his plan forward.
Yeah.
And then we see Johnson picking up the radio.
Yeah.
You know, and moving it towards his ear as the scene ends. Sorry, he's holding. Sorry. Then we see Johnson holding this telephone. He puts it down, and then he's given the CB, and he takes it as the minute ends. So yeah, it's nicely done. They, you know, the plan is moving forward. The movie is picking up momentum at this point, and you know. We're going to have to wait and see where things go. All right. You have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, I mean, we mentioned earlier about Alan Rickman going out of character. So that smile, did it look really put on? Was it that sort of sarcastic, told you so smile before he goes all serious?
I think it is. I think he's like, okay, I've now proven to you that this is what we're doing. You know, that my plan is working.
Yeah.
Believe
in miracles.
Completely.
Yeah.
Christmas is the time of miracles. You know. So the script just has a few little minor discrepancies. First of all, when Little Johnson talks about the helicopters, he goes, "We'll let them sweat a while. Then when they're expecting helicopters, we give them helicopters." You know, which doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Give them exactly what
and
they
want. And then the other difference is that Hans is not the one who calls up Johnson. It's the opposite. Johnson calls back. Okay. Johnson then picks up the CB and says, "Attention in the building." And then, you know, on Monday, we'll see how that conversation continues, you know, from the script. But you know, I think it works better that in the script because Johnson is the one who's at a point where he's ready to move forward. Hans isn't really, you know, Hans has gotten what he wants, but, you know, he doesn't know that the FBI is ready down on the bottom for, you know, to move on to the next stage. So I think it works better that the FBI is the one taking the lead here, you know, essentially trying to say, okay, we're ready. We're going to give you your helicopters as you requested, as opposed to Hans saying, okay, where are my helicopters? Or, you know, I've now got my money. So let's move things forward. Mm. I don't know.
Well, he's just planning the exit now.
All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Weekend Surprise where my guest usually or sometimes doesn't know what my question is. I'm assuming Patty knows what my question is going to be, but we'll see how he answers it. So one of the biggest controversies about Die Hard is whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not. So what do you think, Patty? Is it a Christmas movie or is it not? And make sure to show your work.
It is definitely a Christmas movie. Okay, we had this argument. In fact, my colleagues and I in my last workplace had this argument about whether it was a Christmas movie, and I showed my boss a picture from Sky Movies. There was a Sky Movies Christmas TV guide on my Sky television, and it said Sky Movies Christmas, Die Hard. And I sent him that picture as proof.
No, that just means Sky Movies believe so.
Well, there you go.
Okay,
that should be enough. No, I think no. So the way I see it is, you know, if we have if people have a Christmas sweater competition now in the UK, the one that normally wins it is a grey one with red writing on it that says "Now I have a machine gun, ho ho ho." You know, and it's so ingrained. You know, there's a meme that everybody sees now. It's not Christmas until Hans Gruber takes a dive off the Nakatomi building. You know, it's become ingrained in our conscience and in our consciousness now that Die Hard is there. It's a staple. You know, as we talked about before, The Great Escape used to be a Christmas movie, as we mentioned back in season, you know, in series one, but this now, you know, Die Hard is always there. It's always one of these ones that you feel like you just have to watch. And it doesn't, I don't know whether it's ironic, but it doesn't feel right watching it at any other time.
No, what are you talking about?
You know,
you can watch it all year round.
But there's a different thought process to watching it at Christmas. You're going, yes, right, okay, Christmas is coming.
I guess maybe because I don't celebrate Christmas, so for me it's an all year round thing. Yeah.
This is true. This is true. You know, you can watch it whenever. You know, you're not hung up by these petty details.
You said it, I didn't. You said it.
No, definitely. Yeah. Definitely Christmas. Great. Movie.
So I know that you have something for me. So why don't you Let's see how I do on your surprise for me.
So I've been thinking of a list that I can provide Rob, which is something that could get him thinking and something that takes part in his extensive movie knowledge. So top five for me, Rob, British bad guys in movies.
Well, no, one second. British characters who are bad guys or British British actors?
Either or.
Because you see, I'm assuming that you want to actually have Hans Gruber here. Hans Gruber is not British. Hans Gruber is German.
Ah, not necessarily. Well, the actor is British.
Well, that's why I asked the question.
Okay. So let's go for British actors making bad guys in movies. Your top five.
Okay, I'm not gonna rank them. I'm just gonna give you my five favorite. You know, I can't. Okay. It's gonna be maybe at the end I'll rank them. So the British actors. So obviously Hans Gruber is gonna be there. You know, you definitely have Alan Rickman. Okay, then we're gonna have Mr. Blue from The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Oh yeah.
Okay, nice. played by Robert Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I know it's a good one. then we're going to have we have to go into the James Bond era of things. So, you know, which James Bond villain do I think is the best? My favorite James Bond villain happens to be played by an American, and you know, that would be Zorin from A View to a Kill.
Christopher
Walken. Yeah. So I can't use him obviously. So I'm going to actually go with Blofeld. Played by which Great Escape actor? Donald Pleasance.
Donald Pleasance, yeah.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, good. That's a great segue as well. It's a good link. I like that.
Hey, why not? You know. then Ralph Fiennes as No. That unfortunately is not his best role in my opinion as a villain.
No. Okay.
No, that would be his role as Armin Goth in Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is going to be fun trying to rank these afterward. Yeah. And to top it all off, we're going to go with Gary Oldman. And yes. unfortunately, Gary Oldman has played so many villains. It's really difficult to choose one of them who is his really craziest is. And is the best. I think I'm going to go with his role as Stanfield in Leon the Professional.
Leon, yeah, that's a great role. It's a good part.
All right, okay, so now let's try and rank these five. So we got Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber, Robert Shaw as Mr. Blue, Donald Pleasence as Blofeld, Ralph Fiennes as Armin Goth, and Gary Oldman as Leon in Leon the Professional as Stanfield. So number five for me will be Blofeld. I think Donald Pleasence he's a great actor, but of these five, he's not the best here. Okay, then mm-hmm. I'm gonna actually say Gary Oldman as Stanfield in Leon.
Okay.
Then I'm actually gonna go with Armin Goth, Ralph Fiennes,
mm-hmm.
and then followed by Mr. Blue. If Rickman wasn't on this list as Hans Gruber, Mr. Blue would take it. I think he's such a great character, and yeah. I think that's what. So, and then Hans Gruber is number one. How'd I do with that? How'd I do off the top of my head? I'm very glad that you didn't tell me about this beforehand. You know, I didn't have time to really, you know, do the research on this. So that works really well.
Yeah. You went with your gut. That's a good cop's instinct, as they say.
There you go. I haven't been a cop in 20 years and I still have that good cop instinct, but that probably comes from my movie watching. Watching, not necessarily from the the short amount of time I was on the force, but yeah.
No, it's all good.
Yeah,
it's all
of course
good.
It is.
No, that's a good list. They're right up there on mine as well. Apart from Mr. Blue, I didn't even think of that. Which I will have a word with myself about later on.
Wait, have you seen Taken by the Family 1-2-3, the original?
I haven't seen the original. I have seen the modern.
Oh version. God! Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. But stay away.
But yeah, I will be taking myself back there to watch that at some point.
Yes, you should. You should. I hope at some point in the future to actually do that as one of my movies. So we'll have to.
Oh, really?
It's awesome. It's on my larger list. I have to see if I can, get to it. My problem is that usually when you do a movie that has remakes, you have to talk about the remakes. And 1998 remake is pretty good, but it's almost impossible to find a copy of. So I haven't seen it since it came out. It was with Edward James Olmos and had a great cast. And then the 2009 version with Denzel and Travolta was just horrendous in my opinion. And I don't want to talk about that one at all. So we'll see. But I have stuff planned out for seasons 4, seasons 5. So we'll see. Maybe season 6. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe I can return as the guy who's never seen the movie.
I don't want that. No thanks. You have at least a year to watch it. There you go.
Okay.
You have your assignment, Patty. You definitely have your assignment. All right. So, do you want to once again for the final time tell people how they can get in touch with Patty Flint?
Absolutely. I've just started creating the FFPS Flint Family Pet Service podcast, where we talk all things dogs and dog training. We can also be found on the internet, www.flintfamilypetservices.co.uk, or the same on Facebook.
All right, very cool. While you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is quite simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on my website, or you can find me on Twitter. So, Patty, thank you very much for finishing off the week with us. It's been a fun 3 days. Hopefully you've enjoyed yourself too.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Excellent. And I'll be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!